The following podcast reflects the views and opinions of the hosts and guests only. They do not reflect the views or opinions of any agency or specific members of an association. At times, colorful language may be used and may be unsuitable for people under the age of 18. Discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody. Hello, hello. We are on the road. We are not in the PPA office. You can see we don't have our normal bar and background behind us. We are in Washington, D.C. for Police Week. I am Steve Gramis, president of the Las Vegas Police Protective Association. As always, with me is
Dan Coyne, treasurer of the LVPPA.
Dan's got the mustache coming back in. He's starting to bring it back into style.
3 days in.
Yeah, it's legit stuff there. So yeah, we're on the road. We come back for Top Cops and for Police Memorial Week back here in D.C. And this week is especially special to us. We had a couple of our officers get nominated as Top Cops.
Yes. We had a couple guys actually become the Top Cops nominees, and then an honorable mention as well. It was a cool event that we got to go to last night.
And then we're also honoring one of our fallen, Jason Swanger, passed away from COVID last year. And we're out here. His family's out here. We got to spend some time with them.
Yep. We were at the law enforcement memorial with them yesterday as the Police Unity Tour came in. And there was at least a couple thousand riders that came in. And then after that, the motorcycles was a very cool event.
Speaking of people coming in there, it was it's interesting who you see walking around. It's election season.
Yes.
You see political candidates that have, in my opinion, been anti-cop ever since the George Floyd incident, have tried to pass legislation, taking qualified immunity, making police officers' job harder, almost making criminals out of police officers. And you see these same people walking around the memorial staring at names like they really give a shit about our fallen brothers and sisters. But really, they're there pandering for maybe a little photo op with an officer standing near them or something like that. So to you politicians that are scumbags out there pandering at the police memorial, we hope to not see you in 2023.
Yeah, they were all about defund the police when it was popular to dislike us. Now people are seeing that it's not working and they're back here and acting like they're pro-police. But speaking of scumbag politicians, we got something hot off the press, right?
We do have a scumbag politician, a big one for us back in Vegas. I got a text message this morning regarding a retired officer who had someone from the Steve Sisolak campaign reach out to them. And they basically said, hey, long time no talk. How you doing? Hey, by the way, Steve Sisolak is going to shoot an anti-Joe Lombardo commercial and would love a police officer who would come on there and say not so nice things about Sheriff Lombardo. Would you do it? And I thought that was super telling of...
That's pretty low.
Yeah, Steve Sisolak's getting desperate. He knows that law enforcement's going to get behind Joe. Joe's going to carry the primary, I believe. No knock on anybody else in the primary, but I think he's going to pull through. And in 2023, the governor's mansion's going to flip red, and Joe Lombardo's going to be sitting in there with a cup of coffee and a gun on his hip as a retired police officer and renavigate the state back to where Steve Sisolak couldn't get done.
Yep. And Steve's going to be moving back to Las Vegas. He's still going to be scared to go out to any restaurants with his family because he can't handle confrontation. But, Joe Lombardo's first pick for wildlife commissioner, I really take offense to what Sisolak's trying to do.
Yeah, there should be a disclaimer on Dan, since Dan at the Aviators podcast with the sheriff nominated himself, and I didn't hear Joe say no.
No, he texted you, I think, right? I got the nod?
Yes, absolutely, got the nod. So we got a good show. We're going to talk to our top cops nominees that were in the top 10. Officer Corbin, Officer Cogney, and reliving and retelling that story of when they landed their the helicopter down on I-15 to try and save Officer Micah May.
Yep.
And Jeff's involvement in getting Micah out of the vehicle when others were kind of just maybe a little frozen. Don't knock him for it. It's a tough incident. People just pulled the trigger, but Jeff stepped up.
It shows you with his 24 years on, you know, the mindset of, you know, he's been in so many dynamic situations, how he's going through things, you know, how he's processing it. So I think we're bringing him on now, and we'll talk to him a little bit about that.
All right, up next, our top cops, your top cops, Tom Cognian and Jeff Corbett. All right, we've got our first two guests. The two main reasons why we're here in Top Cops in D.C. for this Police Memorial Week, we've got Jeff Corbett and Tom Cognian, air support and canine officers extraordinaire, not just because of what they did that day in back in July, but because of the work they do every day. You know, these unsung heroes are always doing this type of stuff, and maybe not landing on the freeway every day. Yeah. But they're always putting themselves in harm's way for the benefit of others, whether it's the community, whether it's our officers, and we're glad to have you guys on here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. No, appreciate you guys bringing us out here for this. It's been really neat.
Now, we had some good conversation before we started. We told them, hey, don't be like Ricky Bobby and raise your hands. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands, and talk real low because I don't know how to do it. just being real cool, real chill, and just relaxed, and want to talk about a couple things. One, what's it like coming back here to D.C. amongst all the brothers and sisters in law enforcement? And then two, kind of recapping that day that you guys kind of said, listen, this is what I'm going to do. So, either of you guys that wants to pick it up, let's go back to that day in July and, talk some of the people through it, because we have listeners in India, Italy, all over the world that listen to this podcast, surprisingly. Because you're both members, I'm not going to lie to you and say we have 1.5 million viewers. I said that to the sheriff, and he was kind of like shocked that we did, and I never told him the truth. talk to those folks that don't even know about what took place and what happened that day and what you did.
All right, I guess I'll start. So being in the air unit, we handle so many calls every day that – and they're mostly our priority zero calls. So we're always going to start protocol. We're always going to like a 405Z. Sometimes we go to like 416B general calls, but it's always usually call. And I always laugh with my coworkers because some days we get nothing. And then other days it's just dynamic call after dynamic call. And you're like, what is going on? And that July day was one of those days. It was, the morning was a father who took his young child hostage up in Nora area. So that's where the call started. And then as that call was unfolding and SWAT was going out to it, that's when we started hearing this carjacking that took place. We were low on fuel, and then we started working our way back to the hangar to go help because we heard NHP was in pursuit. But because it was on a different radio channel and we don't talk to NHP still to this day and have no form of communication other than dispatch, we went back to the hangar to get some fuel. And that's kind of where it all unfolded from there.
And it's funny you talk about that because Jeff can talk about, too, during the actual pursuit, like, trying to communicate, the need to communicate, but can't communicate. And you'd think with all the money our agencies have, interjurisdictional type of things, that we'd be able to patch everybody in and get everybody on the same page for assistance, but that didn't take place, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard. I think Jeff can attest to it too. NHP, for whatever reason, they work off a different system. Our radio system that the department has given us works really well. We can talk to North Las Vegas, Henderson, we can talk to Boulder City, we can talk to almost anyone but NHP within our county. And talking to the NHP troopers, the way they move their radios in their car is a lot harder than ours. They don't have a memory spot like we do on your pack set. You can go from 1, 2, or 3 and hit like different sections of the radio. They said that most of them aren't even trained to move the radio because of all the zones you have to go through to hit to a common one. So, and you're in a vehicle pursuit, you can't really blame them for not being able to move radios because it's such a dynamic call. But yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that in today's day and age that we can't even speak to them.
So I always, when I was working patrol, I was like, air unit's always down getting gas. How many hours can you guys be up before you have to get gas?
Yeah, so that's like a common, not only a common question, but like a common concern most people have for us is, you guys are always 480, you're always 480. We actually fly on average, the aircraft is in the air, 12 to 14 hours a day out of a 24-hour work period, or out of a 24-hour period. So that's a lot of flying. So generally speaking, it's divided between two shifts. So we have our morning shift, which is 9 to 7, and our evening shift, which is 4 to 2. But yeah, that helicopter's in the air anywhere from 12 to 14 hours. But I always tell people, imagine if you had one canine dog for the entire valley.
Yeah.
And canines in Northwest, and you're a Southeast cop, and you get in a foot pursuit. Like, we're not, like, Jeff can't go from one, he can't leave that call because whatever the case is, and go all the way to Southeast. Like, there's only one helicopter, and that's kind of, whether we're 480 or not, like, sometimes we're there on the calls, And sometimes we're just handling a different call in a different area and we just can't come and help. But yeah, everyone always kind of, that's kind of the common thing we hear, like, oh, you guys are 480. But we do our flying in, you know, 6-7 hours in a shift for one person out of 10 hours. By the time you pre-flight the helicopter, you do your paperwork, put it away, eat lunch. It eats up your day. But yeah, I mean, we're there. We fly, like I said, every day. So it's just, it just ends up working out that way. But to answer your question, I guess the helicopter only gets about an hour and a half of fuel before we're searching for more.
So Jeff, so you're the first real Metro guy, boots on the ground for that pursuit, and you know, maybe give the people a little bit of background on what this call was. You know, we in law enforcement know what happened out there, but maybe give them some background and some perspective on how you got involved and what you kind of considered your role to be when you got involved, things like that.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So that day when that started off, I was actually on another call in like way out in Enterprise, way south. And as I was clearing up that call that was kind of a quasi barricade, there I heard dispatch calling that NHP was in a vehicle pursuit, and along with North Las Vegas at that point. So I clicked over to North Las Vegas channel because, like as you pointed out, we don't have communication with NHP. And you know, to further that does make it difficult because anytime if I need to relay information as a, you know, part of my radio traffic, I was having our dispatch contact NHP dispatch just to let them know, hey, if this guy bails, don't tell their, you know, tell their officers, don't chase, I'm going to send the dog.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of, you know, pretty much where it was, as long as it was somewhat safe, I was going to send my dog to apprehend this guy.
Jeff, before you continue, so why is it important? Because there's some people that may not be in law enforcement. There's even cops that still don't get it. What, the dog doesn't know they're chasing the bad guy, correct?
Here's the easiest way I can explain it to you, you know, or explain it to anybody really is, think of, Pigpen from Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
He's got that little stink cloud around him, right? Yeah, he's got, you know, that little cloud around him, right? So think of, if he is your point, he's your main source of odor. If he's taken off running and there's a plume of odor coming off of him, the odor that our dogs are trained to look for is called apocrine. And it doesn't matter if you're male, female, you know, black, white, Hispanic, or green and yellow, or purple polka dots, it doesn't matter. You have an adrenaline dump, and a subodor of that adrenaline is called apocrine. That's what our dogs key on. So when the dogs key on that apocrine, as the odor, the source of the odor is running away, the odor trails off and basically becomes like what we call a scent cone. If another officer or somebody is chasing that person, they're in that scent cone of that odor.
Okay.
The dog is chasing that apocrine, a cop also running, chasing after somebody, is emitting that apocrine also. That's why the dog will bite a cop, you know, or somebody else running in that path of that odor. If you're emitting that apocrine, the dog doesn't discern from it. That's what he's trying to find. That's what he's going to find. That's what he's going to apprehend.
All right.
So, you know, he'll do that. But if you think about that scent cone there, that's how a dog, like even on a yard-to-yard search, that's what my dog's looking for. He'll check off on, oh, that's just a homeowner sitting on their apartment patio or whatever, versus, oh, Dad, I got something, and he's letting me know.
Yeah. And as soon as the dog hits the scene, I start being like that pig pen guy because I get nervous from it. So they're all staring at me.
No. So all right. So you're letting everyone know, or dispatch know, hey, listen, if he bails, none of you go after him. I'm here. Let me and my dog do our job.
Exactly. So I guess just that day I had to go 480 because my truck was low on fuel. Running all day long. And
thanks, Joe Biden.
I start my shift at 0400. So, you know, I had been on pretty early that day, running pretty good across the valley. And I was the only canine working that day. So I was one dog for the whole entire valley. And so I stopped way out south, grabbed fuel, and then I jumped on the freeway and I was hauling butt north. And basically, as I hear the pursuit coming, I had to kind of make a judgment call. Do I exit Cheyenne or do I keep going north? And he had just looped around and got back on the freeway at Craig when I darted off at Cheyenne. So I looped around and got back to the southbound side. And then I really watched him go right on the freeway by and jumped in tail end of the pursuit. So that was kind of how that went down for me. And you guys, you know, at that point I was listening to you guys call it out. So I, you know, it was so important for us because that, you know, if I get behind too much in that, I'm not going to be effective. I can't catch back up.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a good call, but thanks to these guys calling it out the way they were, so, gave me that heads up to get off right then, you know, just to make that call to get off.
So watching the video, and specifically after the shooting, looks like there was a lot of people standing around and you kind of came in and took a leadership role. What were you thinking at that time, starting from when you approached the vehicle and started breaking out the window?
So when I first jumped out of the car, obviously my role was going to be with the dog. And the second I came out, I hear the gunshots. And I mean, as you can see on the video, I pull up, I mean, pretty dang quick. I'm pretty much right on with NHP, but I'm bailing out to come out with the dog. As soon as I hear the gunshots, I'm like, oh, it's not a dog thing anymore. You know?
Yep.
So I put the dog back. And as I go up there, as I'm going up there, the NHP guys had already been the shooting, and they start kind of pulling off. And I think at that point they were looking more to take it to a barricade type situation. And I asked one of the troopers, I'm like, where's the trooper that was hit? And he said, he's still in the car. I said, then we got to go. Yeah. You know, there's no time to pull back now. We got to go. And so at that time I just kind of started pushing forward and to break out the window and kind of get the ball rolling a little bit.
Yeah.
So
you get them out, and about this time, you guys know exactly what happened in the air unit, right? Who makes the call to try and ask for you guys to land, Jeff? Was it you saying, "Hey, this is our only shot"?
Well, when it happened, I remember looking up at the helicopter because my first thought was, "I wonder if they can transport."
Yeah.
And I looked up and didn't see any doors on the helicopter. I'm like, you know, we are helicopter certified, and I know the importance of having to be strapped in that helicopter. Even when I put the dogs in, they've got to be strapped in a certain way. And, you know, when we get certified to be in the helicopter like that, you know, it's obviously very important to be seatbelted in just like anything else. But I'm thinking to myself, like, there's no doors on the helicopter. How do we secure, a fellow officer that is unconscious and in pretty bad shape? Can this even be done?
Yeah.
And then, so I looked up at that, and then one of the NHP guys said, can you get that helicopter land? And I just looked, I said, I don't know if it's possible, but I'm going to fucking ask. and you know, that's what I told them, and I asked, and,
that you know. That worked out, I guess. for a helicopter pilot, can you guys just make that decision on your own, or do you have to get any?
No, there's no approval. I mean, you know, my boss at the time, so my direct supervisor, was actually my tactical flight officer. So okay. the only person that I would directly report to was actually in the helicopter that day. But for us, the main thing, because it was so dangerous to land on the freeway, just because, like Jeff said earlier, like if a car were to break through one of the barriers, or anyone were to go around like the traffic break, and they actually hit the helicopter or come near the helicopter, like, I mean, there'd be a million pieces everywhere. Okay. So that's, like, for me, that was my biggest concern. But another concern we had too was we saw him get hit, and we saw how badly he was. Yeah. I worked traffic for 2 years before I went to the air unit. So just knowing him being hit on the freeway the way he was, I knew he was in grave condition. So our concern at that point was, do we put the helicopter and us in a position to take somebody to a hospital that possibly, I mean, we didn't know, we weren't down there, right? So we had actually asked Jeff, Spencer asked Jeff, he said, what is his condition like? Is he still breathing? We don't want to transport, you know, I don't want to sound like gruesome, but like, we don't want to transport a dead body to a hospital if we want to take him there if we can save him.
Yeah.
So we had to weigh those decisions very quickly. Luckily NHP, because the pursuit was so long, they already did, if you watch the video, as you see them get on the freeway, as they keep going south on the 15, miraculously there's like less and less and less traffic.
Yeah, it's
and
all like, backing up. Yeah.
It's all backing up already, because NHP does a really good job at stopping traffic on the freeway. So by the time we get down to Sahara, like, there's not a whole lot of traffic. So by the time they pit, the OIS happens and everything, like, there is no traffic going through. So that helped us as well, or helped me with my decision. In that part stretch of the I-15 there, there aren't really any power lines until you get like south of Spring Mountain.
Okay.
So really quickly, I mean, the tactical flight officer, so Spencer, he does all the police stuff mainly. And then my job is, even when the helicopter is running perfectly, you're always having to think, what if something goes wrong with the helicopter? Where is this helicopter going to land if the engine fails?
Yeah.
So as a pilot, you're constantly always like assessing, where can I go now? Where can I go now? And you're just kind of on the back of your head, you're running like this tape of, what can I do? So by the time we made the decision, I knew where the power lines were. I knew where the highest obstacles were. I knew where the wind was coming from. And then we kind of just, once Spencer and I looked at each other, like, yeah, let's just do this. I just started my descent and just made it between the big light poles that they have on the 15.
Yeah, you guys did a great job. And we're going to tie in the video that Napo put together of you guys' incident and kind of just touching on what you guys, your experience at the Napo Top Cops Award dinner. How cool of an experience was it for you, and particularly you, Jeff? You get to go up and see your video, but your kids were at the table and got the experience with you. So how's this whole experience been? Because I think that was one of the coolest things, seeing you guys as a family get to experience that.
Yeah, it was really neat when I found this out, when I found out that this was even, being put through and that we'd been put in for this, because I didn't know anything about it until I got a letter.
Yeah.
And so I mean, obviously very, very humbled and surprised by the whole thing, but to bring my kids here, I figure that's probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for my kids to see, kind of what their dad does, on a day-to-day basis, but also, to come see this and see their dad get an award for something like that was pretty neat. And my dad and stepmom were supposed to come with me on this trip, and my dad passed away like 2 weeks ago.
So
he was booked to come on this with me, so that was kind of through a little last minute kink in the armor. The kids were coming also, but so it's kind of been a little bit sad for me not to have him here on this trip also, but yeah, so very unexpected. So
So you guys, neither of you had met Officer May before, right? Didn't know Micah from Adam?
Nope, I didn't.
Nope, never.
But now, after watching the video and that, what kind of emotions did that bring back? Here's some officer that you've never seen before, never met before, probably could have went through your whole lives and never seen. And then you watch the video again, and, listen, in law enforcement, we go to a lot of calls. We've probably seen a lot of dead bodies and things like that, things that we don't want to see, but we know it's part of the job. But how's it different with a brother that also wears a badge, and how has that kind of forever entwined you all for the rest of your lives from what happened that day?
Well, I think now as this continues to go, I still, communicate with Joanna May from time to time. I was texting with her last night, and she's a little rock, man. She's solid. She's a tough little gal. But I think when it happened, there wasn't hesitation, to anything to get in there and help. I mean, that like you said, that's a brother in blue, and it doesn't matter. We put our butts on the line for each other every day, and that's just kind of what you do. I never met him before, knew him like your best friend. It's he's still a brother, and you're going to go in and do whatever it takes to get, to help him out. So.
Yeah, I think for me, we go to so many calls, you kind of honestly like desensitize yourself to like all the violence and crime you see every day. So for me, the hardest thing was, it really just hits home when it's one of us. So that was kind of more, it's just a reminder that like this job truly is super dangerous. And this could be any of us. I mean, it could have been me, it could have been you. I mean, and that's kind of like, that was like the hard thing for me was like within like a second. We do a lot of vehicle pursuits in a year that we're involved with in the air unit. And then within 1 second, it's just like completely different. Like this just turned upside down, like with a blink of an eye. Cause I remember I was looking for another helicopter that was flying near us, a tour helicopter. And I look over and I see him in the windshield, and I was like, oh my God, like this is terrible. And your heart just sinks, but it just makes it more real, I think, because we see so much violence and crime in our job, unfortunately, that it's until you see it's one of us that it actually kind of like wakes you up to, wow, like,
yeah.
So along
this shit's real.
Along those lines, we were one of 10 nominated as the top cops. There were 9 other incidents from across the country from last year. Did any of those stand out to you? You talk about, hey, we kind of desensitize ourselves, but now you saw last night 9 other heroic actions, officers shot, officers losing their life in the line. Dude, did any of those incidents stand out to you today? Like, man, that's one I'm going to take back to my team and my partners and go, hey, this is something going on across the country.
I think it just reminds you that the job is just extremely dangerous. And some of the people we work with just, they face it. And a lot of times, like we saw last night, some people just do it all alone, which is kind of crazy. But no, like the one in Phoenix that he was holding a baby, just because I have a kid, or I have two kids, two little kids. So I'm like, I'm thinking like, that's my little kid, you know, that this guy's holding. But I think at the end of the day, the one thing we can say for almost all police officers that do our job is we're there for our community. So, which is kind of impressive, because whether it's us landing on a freeway or Jeff breaking out a window or someone shooting this guy in the head to save a baby or, you know, exchanging gunfire out of an elevator, like these people are there just to support their community and make sure it's safe for everybody else. And that's just what we do. That's what police officers are. So that part's just impressive to me, how many, no matter where you're at in this country, there's people that are out there to make this their community a better place for themselves and their family.
Well, Steve, the one that stood out to me was the Atlanta shooting. You know, these partners go in that elevator.
When Tom brought it up, I was like, that was the one that sat with me all night. Like,
a stud. You know,
what a savage.
Shot in the face, he's unconscious, and 30 seconds later he wakes up and there's still a gunfight going, and he raises his gun and takes the bad guy out.
And you see how shocked his partner is, like, where the hell are those rounds coming from? Yeah. He's like, oh shit, he's back awake, and he's throwing them down range, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's making the hair on my arm stand up right now. Like, yeah, just watching that last night and seeing that too. You know, I mean, it's, you're never out of the fight, and that's, you know, that's one of the things that I think, you know, obviously comes as part of all of our training too, is, you know, you're just like the military guys, you're never out of the fight, and you have to stay in that fight. Your life and everybody else's life depends on it. You got to get your butt back in that fight. And yeah, when I saw that, it just made me like, woo, you know,
just
get back in there.
Just being in the same room with, you know, guys like you and guys like them, it's humbling, and you're sitting back, and you know, I'm not a crier, but you're sitting back fighting tears all night looking at their stories, because it's so emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one that stood out, I think probably one of the ones that stood out the most for me was the canine incident, obviously, just because I work a dog and I know how much I can relate to that. When I'm searching for somebody who's hiding, they know you're coming. Yep. They know, you know, even as quiet as you try to be, the dog's panting, breathing, you're walking, stepping on stuff, opening gates, closing gates, hopping walls, whatever, you're, you know, climbing over, round through in people's yards. And when that bad guy's hiding there, they know you're there, you know, they know you're coming long before you usually know they're there. I mean, unless I can get a good wind with my dog, and I mean, I've got alerts from, you know, from my dog 3, 4, 5 yards away before, but then again, you don't know which yard. You just know, okay, I'm getting it coming this way, you know, so I gotta go over this wall, then the next wall, and he just keeps going until we get to the source. And, you know, but knowing that and seeing how that search goes, and, you know, all of a sudden I have that all the time where I'm waiting, is that bad guy hiding in that? Is he gonna start shooting at me, you know? So I've got to, when I'm working that end of that leash, and again, I'm working a 6-foot leash, you know, six dogs 6 foot in front of me.
And to explain to the viewers, that shooting, the guy popped up and he started shooting the officers, the dog jumps through the air, takes 3 bullets, and end up saving the officers' lives. 2 of them were shot.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, the officers went home, bad guy didn't. But the dog was lost, and kind of explain to us what your relationship is with these dogs. A lot of people think it's just a workling, but it's they're ingrained in your family,
that dog's my partner. You know, I spend more time with him than I do my family, you know, on a day-to-day and, you know, work week basis. You know, I'm with that dog lives with me.
Yep.
And you know, and he's in the truck with me, you know, 40 plus hours a week. And yeah, he's my partner. That's my boy. You know, and I have lost I've lost a dog in the line of duty. The dog I currently have, he's been stabbed, you know, in the line of duty. He's been, you know, got stabbed up pretty bad a couple years ago in a SWAT barricade. And, you know, I mean, I have no doubt that dog has saved my rear end a few times. You know, I had an armed robbery suspect that I had to come out of the yard. I go in the yard first, and he alerts me as I'm going down the west side of the yard, and he alerts me that, hey, I've got odor. You know, he's dragging me in there. I'm like, okay. So I tell my backup officer, hey, he's got somebody here. You know, there's somebody in this yard. And we continue to go in, and I let him start working out where the source was coming from. He, you know, turns his head to the right after the corner of the house, and he's like just pulling, you know, hard. I'm like, okay, he's going to be over here to our right. So the backup officer and I, we kind of cut the pie on the corner, and I can see the guy tucked in there, challenge him. He gives up. We get him in custody. So I finish clearing up the yard, find the sweatshirt that they tried to hide and some other stuff, and then I come out the east side of the yard. As I come out, now I'm coming on the upwind side of the yard. And as I cut through a little doorway there in a carport, there's all kinds of furniture and stuff piled up in there. And as I step through, I suck my leash up, and I step through, and I literally, I mean, as close as he is to me, 8 inches from me or so, the dog hits the end of the corner, boom, turns and bites the guy sitting there. These were armed robbery suspects who jumped a security guard at Boulder Station, and they basically beat the crap out of the security guard for like 7 minutes on video and stole his gun and gun belt. So they had his gun and his gun belt, and that guy's sitting there, you know, armed robbery suspects at 8 inches from me.
Without the dog, you'd have never known.
I'd have walked right by, could have shot me, you know what I mean? But that dog turned and nailed him and saved my butt.
So there's that pretty tight bond. How many dogs have you had?
This is my third patrol dog.
Third one?
My second one was killed in the line of duty, and then this is my third.
Okay. So this is your guys' first time to D.C.?
Mine, yes.
Okay.
I've been here before, I mean, I guess I was a teenager, but this is like my first time as an adult. So yeah, it's been a while.
And experience things as a police officer.
Yeah, it's way different. It's crazy. Everywhere you go, you're seeing other cops everywhere from all over the world. So they're always kind of talking to you. So it's kind of nice.
How interesting is it to be walking around a city? You know, most of the time when we're walking around, we kind of hide our profession, right? We don't walk around with T-shirts on. We don't walk around with our badges out just in our normal day-to-day lives, just because there's, you know, a lot of people out there that don't like the police. Not a lot, but the ones that are there don't like us. We don't want to be a target off duty with our family. But here, you're seeing guys, gals just walking around, badges out, shirts on. Like, we have flooded the city. So if you're a criminal in D.C., I'm willing to bet the crime rate for this week just drops through the floor because of all the cops that are walking
the streets. Yeah, absolutely.
They're everywhere.
Yeah,
I agree. Even yesterday, walking around down at the Police Memorial Park and stuff, I still had I couldn't bring myself to put my badge on my shirt, you know, and have it hanging over my shirt. It's tough. Even though everybody down there was, I still had a hard time bringing myself to do that. It's just not how we normally do it.
For sure.
So for our members who are watching, and of course you guys are here because you're top cop nominees and you won the award. Some of the ways that you can come up here with the union is we give out 2 round trip tickets to members who come to, if you come to a general membership meeting, everyone you come to, you get 1 entry into a raffle, and we pull 2 members from there. And then also the charity that we run, the Law Enforcement Assistance Fund, if you donate every paycheck, even if it's only $1 or $5, you'll be put into a raffle as well, and we were able to bring up one of the LEAF donors, and we're going to start doing that every year, right, Steve?
Yeah, it's you know, our LEAF program is something that you know, we look at. Let's say Officer May was one of our members. You know, we pay for their children's college, room and board. We pay for birthday presents, Christmas presents, graduation, wedding, first child. So we try and use that fund to stay in their lives, but as a give back as well, we try and bring somebody. This is the first time back to D.C., and it's kind of a crusade of Dan's over there to take this fund from where it was to where it's going to be, and exponentially in over a year, he's already been just doing such a bang-up job getting it going. But, you know, again, to the folks that aren't members of the PPA or folks that aren't donating to LEAF, you know, this is the type of stuff we want to do for our folks, and I want to give a big shout-out. He's sitting in the room. He's sitting at the back table. To Brian Yant. Brian Yant is our NAPO guy. For those that don't know how we come to a nomination, we roundtable it as a team. We talk about all the incidents throughout the year, and we kind of come up with a decision. But once that's done, for guys like Dan and I, it's over. You know, we've just made our decision, and that is what it is. But that's where Brian's work starts. Brian puts this whole promo together. Brian puts the whole write-up together. He submits everything off to NAPO. He is in constant contact with them, talking to them about the event that took place and that. And so, you know, want to give a big shout out to Brian for his hard work and everything he does for us on a daily basis. So good job, Brian Yant.
Brian,
he
works his butt off, but he can't drive a bus very well, but everything else he's solid on.
Yeah. And he's about to get married. And what's the T-minus, Brian? T-minus 20 days? Yeah, T-minus 20? Yeah. Hey, so before we let you guys go, thoughts on the ass whooping that we gave to the firemen in the police fire football game, 34-0, with all the good looking guys they have and the calendars they shoot and the muscles they have, and shout out to both sides for playing in that game. But you know, knowing about the game, did you think we were going to whoop them that bad?
No.
Yeah, I didn't either. Like, when I heard the final score, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, we literally killed them. So,
just seeing the highlight video is what was more impressive. But, I mean, it was our guys took it seriously. They practiced twice a week. They worked out for it. They're in the locker room beforehand drinking Gatorade, preparing, and FD's out there not practicing, not doing much of anything, and drinking beers beforehand. And it's like, you guys are going to die, you know, is what I'm thinking. So
they assured us next year they'll get ready for it, and they'll be ready. They thought it was like hockey and baseball where they just walked through us and turned out to be a bad decision for them. But listen, a lot of sights for you guys to go out and see, a lot of things for you guys to do. You took time away from your families to come here and spend some time on our podcast with 4.5 million viewers, and we appreciate it. And any parting words for our membership, fellow cops, just people in general?
Absolutely. I'd love to just a personal shout out to the PPA, to all you guys up here, for everything, number one, that you do for us on a day-to-day basis, keeping our butts safe, you know, out there, you know, help just protecting us from, you know, from anything that comes our way. And knowing you guys are there looking out for us is great. I've been a member for, you know, going on 25 years now, and I'm proud to have you guys there for us, bargaining for us, you know, fighting to help keep our jobs, you know, keeping us out of jackpots, whatever it happens to be. Appreciate that. And also a shout out to you guys for everything that went on for this trip, for you guys getting us out here, helping coordinate just everything that you guys have done, you know. Adela, you've been a stud on everything. She's Johnny on any questions, concerns. She's been on the phone handling this, taking care of that, fixing this. You know, I say even when it came down to you know, with my dad passing away, she was, you know, helping to get things squared away and get, you know, getting things taken care of for me. And just, you know, for everything you guys did, you know. And the PPA even sent flowers to my dad's funeral, which was really nice. And it, you know, but just, you guys are awesome. All the stuff that you guys do for us and coordinating everything for us, and this trip, it means a lot. You guys are absolutely awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I don't know if I can top that, Jeff, but I've only been a member for 8 years because I've only been on the department for 8 years. So, but I joined when I was in the academy or right when we graduated. So I have nothing but good things to say about the PPA. Actually, I always joke with Brian because when he called me in February to tell me that, you know, we got selected for the top cop, when my phone started ringing, it said Brian Yant. I was the first thing that came to mind was like, what did I screw up? Right. Like, why is he calling me? But when he told me, I was like, well, thanks, Brian, that he put us in for it, and thanks for you guys for, you know, nominating us. And this trip's been great. I have nothing but good things to say about the PPA. They've always been there for me. My wife's on the department too. Whenever she was in a pickle, you guys were always there for her as well. So I mean, I'll probably be a lifelong member, and I have nothing but really good things to say, so I really appreciate it. And everyone behind the scenes that do things, especially Adela, who's always there for us, whether we're calling or whatever the case may be. So thank you.
Adela is definitely, we've talked, we've got to get her a bedazzled headset because we're going to do those cut-ins during the podcast and that. But she is amazing. She does a lot of things for us. Rolling 7 doing our podcast. I think we're the only union here that had their own media team come to town. You know, we kind of spare no expenses, and, you know, it's good because of the membership rate we have. We can do these things. And, you know, thanks to the JD and the team for coming out here and putting on our podcast live at NAPO. And hope you guys have a good time and enjoy the rest of the trip here, and stay out of the rain because it's going to get wet today.
Adela's doing a good job of making sure we our whole schedule's laid out for us, and she's got us in line.
All right, we'll come back and talk a little bit more about how special this week is, and one of the reasons we're here as well, which is honoring our fallen Jason Swanger, who passed away last year due to COVID. So stay tuned. All right, thanks to Tom and Jeff. If the little hairs on the back of your neck didn't stand up or aren't standing up right now from what they went through and what they talked about, you're not living. You should go get your pulse checked and your blood pressure because you're probably dead yourself. So. You know, we thank them for being on the show. They did a lot of good things out there that day, and it was a great time last night honoring them.
Yes, and the dinner that we were at was the NAPO Top Cops Award, and it's something that they do every year. Can you tell the guys a little bit about what NAPO is and what they do?
Sure, NAPO, not NAPO, as Mick McHale wanted to make sure nobody said, because it does happen every year. Someone thank you to NAPO. NAPO is the National Association of Police Organizations. They have about 1,100 police associations across the country that are all members. I want to say we're around 260,000
wow.
commissioned officers in that group. And while it is our big national group, they go up to Capitol Hill and they lobby. Andy Edmondson and Bill Johnson, the team, gets together and they look at bills and they try and get bills passed that can further benefit the officers across the country. So yeah. they take a mantra to Capitol Hill and to D.C. that's, hey, we're out here, we're pro-cop, we're going to make sure our folks are taken care of, they have the resources they need, and they're going to also fight against bad legislation when it's up there and try and take the strength of the 260,000 officers that we have and say, hey, listen, we speak for law enforcement, we say this is not what you should be doing. So in a nutshell, that's what NAPO is there for, and that's what they do. They've been doing it a long time, and current President Mick McHale and the executive board do a great job.
So for our members, you know, we are a NAPO organization. So being a member of the PPA, you're also a member of NAPO, and how that works is every one of those 1,100 organizations, they pay dues based on their membership up to NAPO, and then NAPO uses that money to put on great events like this, and then, like you said, to put pressure on the legislature to pass pro-police laws.
And then tonight we have the candlelight vigil. We're here. One of our brothers, Officer Jason Swanger, yeah. Lost his life last year early on during the COVID pandemic, it was really outside at the line level officer. That was our first loss. Of course, Lieutenant Lloyd had passed from COVID, and many people had COVID before that. We had a PSR. John Melwack, I believe, also lost his life to COVID. But Jason was one that hit us hard because, listen, while people in the district attorney's office, while people in private sector, while they had the ability to work from home, our folks still had to go out there, encounter folks that were probably COVID positive left and right with no real protections other than a mask that we know really didn't do much. And even if you're in a close quarter with that thing on, it had to come off so that officers could talk. And so our cops are out there on the daily exposing themselves and their families.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They're bringing it home to their families. And Jason's family's out here this week. We got to see his family and his son, little Noah, yesterday at the memorial when the Police Unity Tour came in. So that was really cool to see them honor him that in that way.
And a segue from that, and you talked about Noah. So Swanger, as a member of the PPA, with our charity, the Law Enforcement Assistance Fund, if you need any more information, you know, hit us up on the podcast or email and ask us questions how you can get involved. But what is our involvement? So our officer Swanger, passed away. And while most groups, and unfortunately even the department, kind of says, you know, hey, we've forgotten about you.
Yeah.
What do we do?
So every birthday, every Christmas, we're there with a check for Noah. Also, we're there for his college tuition. Rewind a little bit. When he graduates from high school, we're there also with a check for him. And then when he graduates high school, we're going to pay for his college. We go off of in-state room, board, tuition, fees, books. I believe it's right around $25,000 a year is that what we're going to contribute to his college education. Kind of, you know, making sure that we're there throughout his life. Because unfortunately, you know, his dad's sacrifice, you can no longer be there for him. So we're going to kind of step up. And, you know, we would never be able to fill that void, but we're going to be there a little bit financially for him.
So, you know, there's a lot of ways people can get involved in LEAF. One of them is a new event that we just brought out a couple weeks ago. It was the
Police vs. Fire Beatdown.
Yeah. It was the charity tackle football game that turned into a massacre of sports. You know, just a little backstory. I remember it was early February. Dan and I are standing at the office, and we looked at a poster behind one of our office workers' desk, Roy Hornke, and it's a tackle football game, police fire, 1977.
Yep.
And we're standing there, and I looked at Dan, and I said, hey, we're trying to figure out how to raise money for LEAF. Why don't we bring this game back?
And then literally within that day, we set a date, and we started going to work, and met with the fire department, said they can recruit from the whole state. Adela went to work, and
Adela didn't go to work right away. Adela was actually out of work.
Fought it.
She was out of work, and when she came back, usually Adela and I talk at least two or three times a day, whether she's at work or I'm at work or not. And Adela came back to work, and somebody said, "Hey, so what about this football game?" And I think her response was, "The hell are you talking about? What football game?" I apparently forgot to brief her that we had this idea.
Yep.
And but like a true champ, Adela never said no. She said, "All right, let's figure it out."
Well, and how cool was it? Because you guys did a lot of work on it, and just sitting back and watching it all get put together, and it was really one of the first events that I was part of that was part of Inception, you know, because everything else was we've always done it, and this event I got to see from the ground up, and then over 2,000 fans show up, and the awesome sponsors that we had from the businesses that helped us, and it was really cool, you know. Being there, I was there with my kids, and then, you know, seeing we have a vision for Leaf, and kind of with right now the funding that we've had, it's only been payroll deductions, but with our new vision, and mine is to eventually insure our membership and be able to pay off the mortgages of any fallen officer that's killed in line of duty is the long-term vision, and seeing how successful this game is. And then our payroll deductions have more than tripled this year. And I think in the next couple of years, we'll be able to source that and meet the goals. It's just really cool to see how far it's come in just a year and a half.
Yeah, and that game, we shout out to Bonanza High School, Coach Keith, yeah. Coach Jaleel, took care of us the whole way through there, got on board with us right away. I had another school that said they were on board and then, you know, kind of turned on us and shut us down. And, you know, I don't know the politics behind it, but it is what it is. Bonanza never wavered. They got on board with us, and
they got us gear.
Yeah,
they got us the field.
We're gonna show some highlight videos too of the game. One in particular where
the lawn chair,
where Darius Gant comes free off of the right edge and makes the quarterback for the fireman do a total front flip.
Oh my God!
When he hits him. Ref called it an incomplete pass. It was a fumble. Quarterback, yes. He fumbled that ball. That should have been a scoop and score, but we got shut down. But
they needed all the help they could get.
Yeah. We had about 3,000 fans we packed into that stadium. And we're always worried, to your point. We have a new event, the Inception. What's it going to be like? What's the turnout going to be like? And
we don't want to let anybody down. You know?
No. The community and everybody came through. It wasn't just police officers and their families. It was people in the community. I know there was a youth football group that had 55, 60 kids there from their football team.
We were able to give them free tickets, right?
Yep. Yeah, we had a donor come through that said, listen, the only donation I want to make is to buy tickets. Just give them out to people. So. It was a great event. It was a long day, and we're going to do it again next year. If you want to get involved, we have sponsorship opportunities available. We'll be doing the game around the same time next year. Some people said to Adela, hey, why don't you play it during the football season? And she's like, well, you're tired of football when it's the football season. This is kind of like the kickoff to the football season. So,
And we were asked about moving locations next year. Like, hey, we're going to have this at Allegiant next year. And I think we need to stay with Bonanza because they're the ones who stepped up when nobody else would.
Yeah, that's my alma mater, so it was a special place for me. And, you know, with regards to anything other than probably the location, if you want to be involved, let us know. If you want to sponsor something, you want to sponsor equipment, want to sponsor, we have a, you know, we can show you what we did. You know, Kevin McMahill for Sheriff sponsored our uniforms. Joe Lombardo for governor sponsored the terrible towels.
I think we got a towel.
We do right have here. A towel there. Look at that. Jeez. Coming in. JD with the short toss there.
Yeah, these are cool.
You know, it's you know, just little things like that to make that event more memorable. Everybody, the first 1,500 that were in attendance got those. We ran out of those pretty quick. You know, it was a lot of fun. All the proceeds went to our charity. Fire's charity, as well as the Children's Heart Foundation, which you got on board for us from the beginning.
Yeah, so one of our members' kids were actually helped out by the Children's Heart Foundation, and they helped pay for the medical and travel expenses for kids with diseases of the heart. Went to one of their dinners, and you know, I was so touched by it. I'm like, we need to get involved with charities like these that are local to our community that help out our members and their families. You know,
yeah, one of our receivers, number one Johnson, his daughter was a part of the Children's Heart Foundation and was a recipient. So it really did touch close to home. The event was great. We had a great time.
We were able to help out Bonanza with a donation from both police and fire for how much was that?
That was $10,000 check we gave Coach at halftime that he was pretty shocked with. And, you know, again, those are the things that we're doing. We're not out taking fees for the workers and things like that. Everything that we get that's a proceed for the game. Of course, we have costs for the game, you know, for equipment, rental stuff. But once we get through that, it's all about the charities and those guys playing that game. And many of them said, I never thought I'd play this game again if not for you guys at the PPA and the fire group saying, hey, we're going to put this game on. I know they had a great time, and we were injury-free.
Good, good.
No big injuries.
I saw a pretty nasty tackle at the end. It looked like the guy's leg folded up, but... Like,
yeah, it had to be in the last 2 minutes of the game that
we
fear somebody.
I was praying,
had
man.
Yeah, and one of our SWAT guys who swore he was going to get hurt and have surgery, I don't think he ever did, other than a little bit of cramping. So, you know, we had a great time at the game. We were having a great time out here in D.C. Any last words, Dan?
No, just congratulations to our top cops and then our honorable mentions as well. They both did a great job, that group. So thank you guys.
And, you know, final thought from me to all the heroic stories we heard yesterday from Atlanta to Delaware to California to Vegas. Cops are savages. Cops are heroes. And I don't say savage in a negative way. We got a cop shot in the face and unconscious, wakes up, and the first thing he does is grab his duty weapon and return fire to the bad guy. We have another officer get shot in the abdomen, then in the foot. We have another officer get shot in the side of the head.
Yep.
And these folks kept pushing through and fighting and fighting and fighting. And SWAT operator leaning and cutting the pie in the corner gets shot in the neck and goes down, and they continue the mission. So.
And then they stand up and take an award and thank all the other heroes in the room, because they look at their event where they didn't do anything special, and then they're looking at everybody else in the room, and these guys are studs, you know?
Yeah, so to all of our brothers and sisters across the country, for those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice, to the ones that work with those, to the real heroes out there, which the people that put on a uniform every day, you're the real hero. Don't let some small group of people protesting or screaming about defund the police. Don't let some...
Scumbag politician like Steve Sisolak,
tell you that, well, now I like you, but for about a year and a half, I didn't. They don't matter. The people out in the communities matter. The people that feel safe in their homes, they matter. They appreciate you. And it was an honor for us to be in the presence of real heroes last night. And, you know, we'll be back. We'll be back in Vegas for the next podcast for sure. Or if anybody in the Bahamas or Hawaii wants to host us, we're more than willing to bring the team out there. So if you're listening from any of those, we'll come out there and run a podcast with your folks. So from Dan, Adela, Brian, Roland 7 Production, we thank you for watching our podcast. We thank you for supporting law enforcement, and we'll see you on the next one. 111, 110.